Hello and welcome to The Wound Doctors, a podcast series dedicated to the study and improved treatment of wounds. These episodes are brought to you by ConvaTec, pioneering trusted medical solutions to improve the lives they touch. My name's Rod Murray, and back in September last year, I found myself, not for the first time, completely out of my depth at the Wounds Australia conference in Sydney. Among the various interviews that we did there was, I thought, a really important one with a university professor by the name of James Charles. Important enough that we thought we should turn that interview into an episode of the pod, so that's what we have done. With me is Dr. Fran Henshaw, and Dr. Fran, clearly I have no medical expertise, but I thought that what James had to say on that day had really long-term implications for medicine generally. Am I right about that?
Absolutely, Rod. So James Charles is actually the director of the First People's Health Unit at Griffith University, and he is a First Nations person himself, and he has really dedicated his life not to being a podiatrist, even though he is one, but to integrate cultural awareness into academic programs so that healthcare practitioners can be more in sync with what's required to actually deliver healthcare to these people and do it in partnership with First Nations people as opposed to just giving them what they think they might need.
This fits into that theme we've talked about before, doesn't it? That healthcare is about more than just wound dressings, treat wounds. Wound dressings, treat people. And this really plays into that, doesn't it? This notion of being more culturally aware and that whole bedside manner is probably not the right way to put it, but kind of plays into that, doesn't it? The whole person being treated.
Absolutely. And I think the thing that really resonated with me when we spoke with Professor Charles is that he was very compassionate to people like me who, you know, I'm prone to putting my foot in it, to be quite blunt with
you. Well, you're a podiatrist.
And I think that he realises that although we're trying our best sometimes, we're not always culturally competent, and that's actually okay. And so long as we're trying and using the tools that are available to us to improve this, incrementally, we might be able to actually bridge this healthcare gap and improve healthcare outcomes for First Nations people.
His work will really come to the fore in a generation's time, won't it? That's when we'll really see the benefits of what's happening now.
Absolutely. He's playing a long game.
Terrific. Enjoy James Charles.
Welcome, Professor James.
Thanks, Fran. It's a pleasure to be here. And Rod,
thank you very much.
And, yeah. Today we really want to talk about the work of this First People's Health Unit. So first of all, give us a rundown.
Yep, absolutely. Happy to share. Look, predominantly, the First People's Health Unit is really looking at, getting graduates from all the health degrees across the board at the Griffith University, so not so much specifics for anyone, but really to have them graduating more culturally aware, more culturally competent, and importantly, more culturally safe. So how we go about really doing that is looking at the curriculum that are being taught, looking at the various accrediting bodies, what's required from the university, and then helping them to develop curriculum that will, you know, get those outcomes of producing better understanding students.
Right. So you're actually embedding this across the curriculums of all of your health students.
Yep.
And is that the only university where this happens currently, or?
No, I think it's happening across all of the universities. I think from my own experience working at other universities and visiting other universities, it's at different levels. You know,
yes.
Some have started sooner and some have started later. But importantly, the work has been in the past predominantly up to the university and the Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander staff.
Yes.
But that's why I wanted to mention the accrediting bodies and ARPRA, because of the important work that they're doing requiring each individual. So I think we have nearly 40 different health professions at the university, and nearly all of them have a requirement from, you know, accrediting point of view to be include this type of stuff. And apart from the content of curriculum, also there's a need to attract more Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander students, but also the retention. So in the past, we've had a lot of increase of students coming in, but then them not retaining them, and or not graduating, and that's an issue.
Yeah. And do we know why they're not retained?
Look, I think there's a lot of reasons. It's probably a quite complex, you know, reasons for that. I think perhaps some students are not prepared. I think there's a lot of students that come away from rural and remote places that are probably, you know, not used to, particularly if you think about perhaps even, you know, in Sydney here or in the Gold Coast campus that we have. It's almost a big city within itself, the campus. And I think a lot of Aboriginal, Torres Strait Islander, you know, young people or even older people coming down, not used to that sort of hustle and bustle.
Absolutely.
And the cost of living, you know, if you're talking about that in Sydney, same as in the Gold Coast, just to get any kind of accommodation. And I can tell you that from a point of view from myself moving to the Gold Coast recently, to try to get somewhere to live, trust me, is very difficult.
And I think, you know, when you're facing a big change in life, like going to university, to be taken out of the environment that you're used to as well, I can see what you're saying now. It's like a double whammy, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
James, talk to us a bit about the importance. For those of us who've grown up in white Australia, mm-hmm. all of these issues don't affect us, and it can be hard to understand why it's important
yeah.
to be culturally sensitive and understand why some of these things are important. Can you give us some ideas there?
Look, to be honest, it's quite a complex issue, but one of the gaps in life expectancy, in wound care and those sort of things is at least the perception that people are not always culturally aware. They don't understand culture. They don't understand, you know, those types of things. And it's not always fair, you know, because people are well-meaning and doing their best. You just don't know what you don't know.
It's often not malice, is it?
No, absolutely
it's
not.
It's ignorance.
No,
more
I would
so.
Say more innocence, really. I don't even necessarily, and I know Fran sort of mentioned about sort of ignorance, but really I think it's innocence. You know, you don't necessarily know, and that's what we're there for at the university.
Yeah,
but, you know,
I think that's really true. And I think that, you know, it's great that a lot of this has been embedded now into curriculums, and I think that, you know, the mandating on the APRA side of things is great, because that will really drive this thing that needs to happen. But unfortunately, there are some dinosaurs or people like me who come from overseas, and we've kind of missed out on all of this.
The worst kind. The
overseas dinosaurs. And I think, you know, I'm glad you call it innocence and not ignorance. And I, you know, is there like a kind of potted
10 tips, a listicle.
Well, yeah, I'm happy with three. Can you just give us a few things you can do?
Firstly on that, I just want to mention that sort of a lot of people are developing now, you know, sort of pay-as-you-go cultural awareness training mm-hmm. for everybody. So obviously the university students are getting a lot of this stuff now and at conferences for a lot of health professionals, but there are for everyone available to go and do some of that cultural competence. Look, some of the big things, it's really around, I suppose it's that understanding, you know, really, and I think patience, you know, people are in a hurry, I understand that,
yeah.
people want to get things done, so they often go to community where they want to help, and it's perhaps, you know, whether it's remote, regional or in the city, you know, often I've worked in Sydney and I think there's just as many issues from my point of view as there are in some remote places, but people need to have an understanding of the time it takes to build that rapport. So first of all, you need to have some sort of understanding, but then you can't rush in. Don't rush in. Don't start, you know, because people are busy. I understand that. Their time's important and they're very, you know, important people. But you need to sort of, I think, leave some of that, or can I say ego, at the door a little bit when you go into community. Understand, appreciate the intelligence, you know, cultural knowledge and Indigenous knowledges that we've had for a very long time. So appreciating that, but humility. Humility, and that's part of what I was saying about sometimes people go to community, you know, and rightfully they are proud of their training as a podiatrist or physio or yep. whatever it might be, and they've done a master's and they've done a PhD and all of those things. But I would advise people not to go into community.
We're here to fix.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And you will listen to me and I'll tell you what you need to do.
Do you know what? It's quite interesting because we set up a clinic for podiatry students in an Aboriginal medical centre. And the feedback that we got from the people that they saw was that they enjoyed it. And I think it was because the people who attended the clinic had this possibility to talk about their culture to the students. And because the students didn't actually know very much, they weren't lording it over them. And I think we ended up with a very busy clinic. And I think that that was the secret sauce, if you like.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. And I think that's, what I suppose, what I mean is that the students would have went in. Often, if I'm honest as well, university students are usually more enlightened in a way as well, or more open to learning
yes.
that stuff, where a lot of people, you know, including overseas too, you know, have had their real westernized, you know, philosophy and theory and that's been really drummed into them, and they don't see any other, you know, knowledge as being as equal or as important. And I think whereas a lot of university students, they have that innocence, of
yeah.
course, and that naivety, and that can be a good thing because they're coming in without a lot of that predetermined or, you know, that way of thinking, and I think that's really important.
Will change ultimately in this area, James, be generational? It feels like one of those issues where It's going to be a generational change, and that things will be better, but it's going to take some time.
Yeah. Look, absolutely. There's no doubt that this will take time, and I think, but like I said, I want to go back to the accrediting bodies. I think imposing those requirements is really very helpful for people like myself.
It's a sort of an important statement, isn't it?
It is.
To everybody, that this is important enough that it needs to be noted and accredited. Yeah.
It will be, or you won't be accredited.
Yeah, that's right.
And look, sometimes you don't want to drag people kicking and screaming. Look, I can say that I completely understand the how busy and how packed curriculum is. We've already got this and that, and then someone's going to have to do that work. But that's why people like me and the First People's Health Unit are there to help. Mm. And other universities have similar or will get, you know, a similar unit that will be there to help with them. So it is really around a two-way learning, two things. It's we're there to help them, but we want to also develop the capacity of the teachers. Because like you said, Fran, often people are well-meaning, but they're not really sure, and they don't want to make a mistake. And we don't want people to make mistakes either, you know, and we want to encourage them to be brave enough to do that, but to do it in a supported, you know, way.
Can we draw a straight line from some of this historical lack of understanding and, in many cases, a disinterest in learning about Aboriginal culture? Can we draw a straight line between that and the inequities we do see in the health system?
Or
is it more nuanced than that?
Yeah, look, it probably is. It's probably more complex. But nevertheless, I think, you know, if you're looking at data, I think that probably there would be a fairly straight line toward that. I think, and again, that's not really blaming. It's really about, I suppose, people acknowledging that and understanding that and making sure that we correct those things and being part of the solution. That's really what I want. Because people often, when you're having some of these conversations and discussions, they think, oh, they feel guilty or it's not. I don't want that. I only want, we can't forget about those things. We have to acknowledge that they happened, and we want to move on together in reconciliation. So this is about reconciliation around, and that's why I said about working and building capacity of others, that we're doing it together, you know, and acknowledging those things, but moving forward in a positive way.
How do you do that, James?
Well, it's about, like I said before, first of all, including this curriculum, and so we're getting health professionals. That's why it will be generational, because obviously all the new crop of health professionals graduating will have this greater understanding. And then eventually they will be the lecturers, they will be the teachers, they will be the supervisors of staff and other students that come along. And that's really what I believe is the answer.
This will be the old days. We talk about the old days, right. This will be the old days.
That's right. I think so. But look, I mean, there's been great leaps forward anyway in this space, but there's a lot more to be done. But it is very complex, and you know, and within Australia, in the sense of remoteness and all of those things, there's another, you know, sort of issue. But
geography,
I think,
works against good health outcomes, doesn't it, for a lot of people?
It does.
There was an exceptionally powerful talk today at the conference from somebody who works in a remote community where they have got catastrophic problems with wounds. And you know, it's nice to talk about this generational change. What does the short term look like? There is massive health inequality, isn't there?
There is, and that's just the reality of it. And look, short term, look, I think there has been some leaps forward, but I think for some of those remote communities, I've been to those communities too, and I think, Leslie, you can see the passion, because look, what happens is that often people, we become desensitized to a lot of pain and suffering. We watch the news and we see things and we just think, but if you're there, even if it's a car accident, if you're one there and you see the noise and the screaming, and it's much more powerful. And it's a bit like when, you know, I've worked in those communities as well, and when you're the person, particularly when I've worked in my own community, and you're the person that's on the end of the plinth with the foot in front of you that's infected, and you know that this is, you know, not a good situation, that's really powerful. And that's what motivates me, and you can see the passion with Leslie that really motivates her. And I would really, and I think that's what Leslie said in her speech, that she would love for all of these people to come out there. I would love for every person. And having said that, you don't have to go out to the middle of nowhere to see this, trust me. You know, there's a real fallacy that people believe that it's much better in the city, and that's been my experience, mostly working in cities where it from a foot health point of view, from travelling, there isn't so much of a great difference. And you can see that going to an Aboriginal mission and seeing some of those things. It's a great empathiser building.
I mean, Leslie's call to action I've been to many, many conferences. I have never heard anything so compelling, I must say.
Yeah.
And it really was a call to action. And I think that the audience is here. And you're right, we need to start looking for these solutions now so that we can bridge the gap between when the generational trickle-down happens.
It does also bring into focus, I think, James, the importance of having more Indigenous people within the health system as practitioners. That surely must be a part of the solution. Those who already come with an understanding,
yes,
of complex
a
problems
lived experience.
That, can, and
yeah.
that can be very difficult to grasp if you haven't got the lived experience.
Exactly, and that's part of what I said about the accrediting bodies are also saying to universities, you know, that's probably a little bit more of a longer term thing where they're saying exactly that, that they need to show evidence of what they are doing to attract, what they are doing to retain, and what they are doing to graduate. And that, of course, that's a two-way thing too, or more than two, is in the sense that it builds, you know, that the capacity of those individuals and, you know, lifts their life, quality of life, and also potentially life, experience and so forth. But it then does provide lived experience on the ground, people that are really having a true understanding of what's needed in the community and culture and all those things.
I think we all understand that desensitising notion that you talked about and how it's more powerful when you're a part of the community. How do you keep going, though? Because it feels like some of the problems we face in this area have been ongoing for so long, and it doesn't feel like we're moving forward. Are we? But it's so slow we don't notice it? Or
yeah, look, it is part of the problem, and it can be deflating sometimes, even for myself, working in this space for such a very long time.
It's a lot of pressure.
And, yeah, it is, and it can be difficult at times, but I think, you know, certainly, you know, seeing some of the students, when you know that can really lift you up and getting some small gains. But look, there is a lot to do, and sometimes it can seem insurmountable, but I think it's just, you know, small steps, but getting those things, and as in, you know, the crediting bodies and, you know, doing those things, but yeah.
But I think it is like eating an elephant, isn't it? You've got to chop it up into small pieces, and if you look at the magnitude of the problem, it's easy to back away from it, but you have to say, I can make incremental differences, and I think, you know, it's great that there's people out there and that there's specific units such as the First People's Health Unit that have actually been set up to address this. Yeah.
Do you feel mostly goodwill, James, from within the health industry?
Look, I really do, and I could see it today. I could feel it today being up there, you know, and that was just that makes me feel so much better, because the reality is that health professionals are leaders, you know, whether they want to be a leader or whether they see themselves as a leader, they are leaders in their communities, and them being, you know, more understanding and more open to these things and learning these things and then, you know, sharing that with others and people looking at them, you know, following them, following their example, you know, even doing, you know, acknowledgement to country or, you know, and those types of things, which may seem small in some way, but they're big steps that we need, that acknowledgement and understanding. So I am often motivated, you know, by coming to places like this and seeing that and feeling that in the room, and same with, you know, with the students and things. And so, yeah, look, there's a long way to go and there's a lot to do, but we are making some really positive steps, and that's what I feel, and that's what keeps me going.
It's a happy note to end on, so I think we should do that. It's been fabulous to talk to you, James. This is something we really could talk about for days and days.
Oh, yes,
and days.
Absolutely.
And I don't doubt we'll have you back on the podcast at some point, but it's been fabulous to chat today. Appreciate it.
I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about this topic.
Thanks very much.